face, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome to Stacks and Giants. I'm Tom Howard, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures, they're up $37. We're trying to get up again today. Yesterday we kind of settled into a mixed day. Dow up 266. Nasdaq futures up 127. Lou, how are you, bud?
Good morning, sir.
What's a good word on your end? What's a good word in Colorado?
Let's see. The good word in Colorado is we don't have, as of right now, we don't seem to have any raging monster forest fires yet. We've had
this is early for that,
some very nice weather days, and the governor is going to start reopening the state on Saturday.
What do you think that's going to go?
I think it's going to go, you know, fine. I mean, I think it's the right move. I think it's being done, you know, in a reasonably intelligent way. I mean, to my mind, the most important thing on this whole reopening debate is the recognition that we are not, you know, we're not doing this social distancing thing to necessarily, you know, save the total number of lives that would be lost under the, you know, from the infection, but we're doing it to keep our hospitals working, and the hospitals here have not been overwhelmed, not even close. And so the healthcare system is going to be charged with dealing with whatever happens. I'm going to be very interested to see, you know, what people say or what the press, how the press handles this when people go back to work and start interacting again, and we see a smaller spike in the number of hospitalizations and ultimately fatalities. And then, you know, see if the press starts screaming, see social distancing works, et cetera, because as you and I know, Chief, from the stuff we've been reading over the last week, social distancing is likely not going to level the number of, or reduce significantly the number of fatalities.
What you just said is absolutely the truth. And I'm going to say that you're one of 2% of the population that has any idea that that was the original message. That message is morphed into...
Yeah, it's astounding to me that the press and frankly, the administration, well, the press, it's astounding to me that the press has distorted it to the extent they have, but I think that's explainable because this is seen as some kind of anti-Trump move. I'm surprised that the administration has not more plainly told people, look, we're trying to prevent the swamping of our healthcare facilities, and that's all we're trying to do. Until we get a cure, until we get a vaccine, we're not going to put a significant dent in the number of people who are casualties of this thing. And even the push now that I see the message that I see the progressive press pushing, is this idea that, well, if we'd had more tests, and I certainly don't believe that. The tests we've got right now aren't that reliable.
Well, some of them are starting to be, but I don't understand why. I mean, Maddie, when did we report? I'm starting to, this stay at home is blurring my time horizon. I'm going to say 3 weeks ago. Maddie, correct me. Abbott Labs said they had this super duper pinprick test that you learned in 5 minutes, and it was going to be in the Chicago area that week, and would be hundreds of thousands of them a week, and it'd be in 28 states in 3 weeks. Is it, you know, anybody who's even come close to getting one of these? I don't. Maddie, do you know what I mean?
Chief, the medical professionals that I read and that you read, there's a number of them saying the things are just not that, they're not that effective. So, or not that accurate. All right, so let's just assume we had an accurate test. And what are we doing with it? Is the idea that we test everybody every day? Because if what we're trying to do is prevent contamination, then what we are looking for is an instantaneous quarantine the minute you become contagious. And we know that you become contagious for days before you manifest any of the symptoms, maybe as long as, you know, 5 or 6 days. And so are we going to test everybody all the time? Is that really the regimen? Because that's the only way I see that testing cuts down on overall, you know, stops overall infection.
Well, testing would do...
The minute you contract the thing, you're tested. Or within minutes of contracting it, you're tested.
I think,
and so that way we can quarantine you.
Let me run this by you, Lou. I think if there were earlier tests, there seems like there's a couple iterations that I've been kind of quoting from the article we sent out yesterday about the doctor with the 8 points about the thing, Dr. John something. Anyway, I think if we would have had some tests earlier, we could conceivably have done the South Korea route where anybody who came in, like from the airport or tested, you could have chased back and seen anybody they came in contact with and tested them. You had maybe a chance for a week or two to actually stop the thing at the borders. You had a chance, but you blew that.
I might agree with you, although contact tracing will not work in the United States.
I said, not
to that extent.
Say, if we had a chance, it was in... I actually do believe, Lou, that if we'd have been on this, not just we, but if the Chinese... And I blame... I don't think anything happens in China where our businessmen, our newspaper people, somebody doesn't know about it because we've got so many friggin' people over there trying to save a dime. So where this all blame lands, I don't know. I hope there's a hell because I can't figure them out. Maybe the big guy upstairs can. But point is, if there was a chance, now we have the guy in Paris, the doctor who kept a swab from somebody, I'm thinking around Christmas.
Yeah.
He had a guy three weeks earlier than anybody ever reported. My point is that we have lost the ability to do that. And I think it's out over here. Now the testing does two things for me. One is, if I had some program of testing, okay, I at least would have some kind of an idea of how big the problem is that I have. I'd have some kind of a sampling. I'd have some sort of a clue as to whether, 40% of the people in New York have it, 30%, 20, 10. I don't think they knew then. They don't know now. I think every single decision our people have made have been made with zero data, virtually, except for the stuff coming out of hospitals. And even that was tainted because you don't know how many people got infected in the hospital because they didn't know what they were doing. It doesn't appear.
And this data lag, I think you can blame easily in China, because we would have had a lot more data had we been working with them, or had they been working with the rest of the world and not trying to cover up what was going on in Wuhan. And by the way, that's another. Yeah, that's just one more piece in the chain of evidence that indicates that this stuff got out of a lab or something like that in Wuhan.
Lou, be honest with you. Other than the
Chinese reacted to it.
Everything I've read from Europe, everything I've read from a couple of things here. Now, again, I'm not as good or as bad as you and Kevin of immediately excoriating the author, but everything that I've read has said that didn't happen. I've read
a lot of stuff that said that, you know, I'm not saying it, I'm not 100% saying it did or didn't. I'm saying there's a ton of evidence that it did.
Everything I've read that said it came out of a lab has come from some extreme right wing rag.
No, that's not true. I mean, I've put stuff up on Twitter and on Facebook talking about the fact that discussing the reports from reputable scientific organizations that said, look, and I'm not talking about engineering the virus. That's a Trojan horse argument that's being, again, put out by the progressives that don't want this thing discussed because in their mind is somehow... mitigates the blame that Trump has to share on this.
Lou, you're absolutely on the wrong side of that one. I very seldom tell you that. Everything I've read in the last week was predated 2 weeks ago by reading something from, I don't know who the hell wrote it. It had to do with the election that the Trumpies are absolutely convinced that that Biden's Achilles heel is China. Which maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know that much about Biden, nor do I care, really. It's like Elmer Fudd to me. But the point being is that now everything you hear is that the Democrats, and now all of this has become the progressives. That they're the ones that are saying that, you know, that they are the guys that are turning under the shovel the fact that it came out of this thing in the lab, and Trump's guys are going to exonerate the world and show the truth. That is such BS, Blue. I can't even taste it.
I mean, I don't understand what sources those are, because reputable sources I'm reading are they're not making conclusions. They're saying, here's why we think it could have come out of the lab. It could have been an accidental release. It could have been something we know, Chief, that they were working on it. We know that lab was working on bat virus, and we know coronavirus, and we know that that one of the projects they were undertaking was the creation of a virus, or the study of that virus and how it moved or could move from bats to people. They know that's a matter of public record. The studies, the funding.
Okay, my weekend.
So why is it inconceivable that somebody screwed up and let that thing out?
In my weekend of whatever I'm supposed to be doing, staying home alone, I spent a lot of time on this, and I do this. I don't just go to, not accusing you of this, but places where I'm going to get the answer that I want. And I researched this lab in China, and I've got this whole thing. And there was a guy here in the U.S. Again, I should probably remember the names, but he's saying, yeah, you're right. That's what that lab does, because China is almost like an Africa,
yeah,
in the sense that these viruses. They showed pictures of this river. In these caves, Louis, you could drive a truck into them. They said people go into these caves because they're canoeing down the river. He goes, especially if they're from another country, they're idiots. There's bats. The stuff that's in there is like an Ebola cave in Africa. So this lab you're talking about in China, that is what they do. They actually go, right, and they had pictures of some of these bats. God, Lou, some of these bats had teeth like people. I had no idea bats had.
And the bats don't. Anywhere near Wuhan, hundreds of miles away.
But what they're saying is, every time this happens, and this is what they're searching for over there and cannot find, according to this guy, because he has people allegedly that have framed in the place. But he says that they send people in these incredible like space suits into these caves, and they kill some bats. They try and find what the new diseases are, and you don't get from that teethy bat in that cave to the people. There's always an intervening host, and they went back and named the last two or three diseases this happened with, and somehow or another it gets from a bat to something to people. It never actually comes right from bats to people. So they go back to the front stage. I said, you should see the people that go into these bats. They're like the people that go in the Ebola caves.
I am familiar. I am familiar with that process, and I am familiar with what happened. What I'm saying is, The overreaction by the Chinese government, the incredible suppression that occurred, was out of character for similar types of flu that have arisen in China, number one. And number two, those bats are nowhere near Wuhan. And number three, those labs were doing the research. And number four, and I'm just going to pitch this out, I mean, there's a whole bunch of factors that point in this direction. I'm not saying it's definitive. I'm just saying this is something we need to consider. The fourth thing is that there's at least one case, I believe it's in Beijing, of one of these lab directors, one of these research directors, being thrown in a slammer for selling experimental animals to the wet markets. So, look that case up.
Well, but
it's not this handled one of these samples.
I'm convinced that the stuff got here. Now, we have regular people flying back and forth. I mean, this is the world we live in. How does as our listener wrote in,
let's just finish up this discussion. I don't think the idea that the virus was a release from the lab, not that it was engineered necessarily, because I don't believe the science shows that, but that it was released from the lab accidentally. The lab has crappy security procedures and lousy sanitation procedures, and we have a history already in China of people selling experimental labs to, or experimental animals to the food markets.
Lou, okay? it could have been somebody researching the darn stuff outside that somehow didn't keep his protocol. Who knows, right?
Exactly. But in any event, that's another reason I said, let's, if you want to blame somebody, blame the Chinese who suppressed this report and then stopped us from going in there to help them look at what it was.
And I'm thinking they did that, they did all that, and I'm with you. I also know that we have people that have factories over there, and like the person from Australia who wrote us the letter, thank you, said, Qantas, it's a long flight. Qantas was dumping people off the plane sick. They didn't care. They knew they were sick. You could tell by looking at them. And they didn't...
Well, so you're saying an airline should have been screening people?
No, what I'm saying is there's people here that have factories, people around the world that have factories in that area that knew there was a tremendous amount of sickness going on, and there were an army running around to people's houses and an awful lot of body bags that didn't care and sent their people over there anyway, is what I'm saying.
Everybody and their dog, including Dr. Fauci here in January, were saying that the flu was more dangerous than this Wuhan virus, and that really what you needed to do was get a flu shot. I specifically remember that announcement. And I remember thinking, yeah, I've seen those pictures coming out of Wuhan where they're fogging the streets with disinfectant, and pictures of people dying and dropping dead on the streets. And I don't, that doesn't sound like it's, you know,
no,
something we can ignore.
And I think it was here.
But that was the line.
I think it was here in December. But the point being is it got here. We can't do anything about that now except hopefully paying a few scalps. But now we have a situation where it's here. We've gotten a hell of a lot better at treating people, and that I'm sure will go on. The hospitals are able to receive people, and we have our situation. Now, in the last 2 days, we've got Mayor de Blasio, the governor, stunned because 82% of the people now that are testing positive have been at home, which has been my point all along. All he did was jam people back with their families to get it. And Governor she wants to be president, Lori Lightfoot saying she's stunned that the Hispanic community has a higher incidence. Why is she stunned? There's more generational.
It's more important for her to have African Americans as victims than it is Hispanics.
Well, but either way, it doesn't surprise me. The Mexican people that I know a lot of them, live 2-3 generations in the same house. The average person per house in the Mexican community has got to be 2 people more than in Lincoln Park. Maybe 3 or 4. So it does not shock me.
This goes again back to the idea of data. Your excellent point on data. And this is why hindsight is so stupid in this case. We're looking back and saying, well, what we should have figured out this, we should have figured out that. Nobody knew how contagious this stuff was. We just found out within the last week that there's a new mutation that is now dominant.
First of all,
in the country, rather than the original virus.
You obviously didn't listen.
We're still exploring all that.
You didn't listen to the show yesterday. This is what is so bizarre in this, Lou. This is what I want to ask you about, because you're some ways more conspiratorial than Wayne.
Well, I'm bizarre, but you might as well just admit it. I'm bizarre.
That's okay. That's all right. We are in some way. That's why we like coming on. This article that just hit, by the way, it hit, where are we? Thursday, hit Tuesday afternoon, because the market was up a bunch, about the mutations. Okay? If you were to listen to, I'm going to say 3 weeks ago at least, maybe 4, we had a very rainy weekend, so I was sitting at my computer at home, reading some article from a German group. Everything I've read that seems to make some sense, Lou, is from overseas. Everything here seems to have somebody's agenda stuck through the whole damn thing. I'm just saying. So these German guys
the overseas articles have agendas. They're just not obvious.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So this one was from some scientific study group, and they were talking about this particular germ, for lack of a better term, and the amount of mutations. And they said out of the 90 bazillion proteins in the thing, they've identified, this is the European people now, and they, at the time they said, yes, the European strain is slightly different than the one in Wuhan. So you could extrapolate to say that it had mutated, and, well, by the way, it was a little stronger in terms of genes than the other one. And they said, by the way, they named the proteins, Lou. It's like protein 456, 855. They said, as of this time, it's astounding how little this thing has mutated. It's only mutated in four or five proteins. Because what we don't want to see is the thing mutating in like 50 or 100.
So this I read that report too.
I sent it to you, I believe. They said right now it looks like the strains that are slightly different are no more deadly. If you treat them the same way, and they don't seem to have any difference in the mortality. Now,
in fact, at least a number of the strains were actually less effective.
So here now, all of a sudden, this article lands here. And the whole thing, they didn't dispute anything in the first one, Lou, but they said it in such a way, they made it sound that the gene itself, because it was dominant over the other one, made the whole thing stronger. And if you're a dum-dum, which I'm not saying a dum-dum, but if you didn't read the one that I read 3 weeks ago, I'm going through this thing and I'm going, holy bleep, Batman, this thing is going to be stronger. It wasn't until even the article I read, it said, if you want to read the whole article, you got to go to the LA Times. So I clicked through the LA Times. They've got the last paragraph after scaremongering everybody through the thing and sending a market down, God knows how many points. The last paragraph, it says, oh, by the way, doesn't seem to make any difference if people have it. It's no worse.
Exactly. I saw that. I mean, but again, my point is, the reason I raised it is because, again, the data points for these mutations are different. We just don't know. But you're right. That's exactly right. When I saw that headline, coronavirus is mutated, I went, well, that's not news. Coronavirus is mutated, number one. Number two, this discussion has been going on for weeks. And then I read the article and it said, oh, it doesn't seem to be any worse. That's exactly right. This is the clickbait journalism of today. And the idea that, if we can't hammer, the administration or something else, we'll get people terrified. It's the blizzard reports of the Midwest during the wintertime. More people clicking on these articles, and so you put up headlines that terrify people.
Yeah, but Lou, you think these people could stand down because this is serious, but they're not going to.
They're not going to stand down, and, again, it's astounding to me how things that are really dangerous, and by that I mean the General Flynn situation, things that I consider to be really dangerous to the country are getting short shrift here because of the uncontrollable and random spread of this virus that, frankly, we seem to have contained,
and we haven't really
seem to be able to deal with.
We haven't really, because look what it's done in the plants in Iowa. If it enters a plant, everybody in the plant gets it in 2 weeks. The thing's incredibly contagious.
Yes, but we're not stopping it. We're not going to stop it. But what we've done is we've taken the steps that we can do to prevent the healthcare system from being swamped.
Well,
so people are going to get sick. We're going to have to deal with that.
The fight right now,
and it's going to go on. It's going to go on for it's going to be like a flu from now on.
Lou, what's happening? And it's you're seeing a perfect storm is a term used too much. Last week, report came out that the Americans are in record household debt. We have issues in some states, actually a lot of states. Some don't admit it, with pensions and other things. The other people can't. I know Illinois here, I mentioned yesterday, we have gone absolutely to the extreme end. We went from people not getting raises, paying for other people who are getting raises. And this has nothing to do with politics or anything. I'm just a guy with numbers. To me, for the last 10 years, that's been insanity, Lou. because it can't go on. And now we've gone to the extreme where people who we won't let work are paying for people that are getting paid not to work and are getting pensions. I mean, what do these people think is going to happen? I mean, I'm not talking. We are real close in my mind to some sort of a revolution. People in Illinois, Jay Pritzker, he's got the only way anybody's going to believe that bleep is if all the people around him aren't getting paid when they tell people to stay home. If they're getting paid, this isn't me. I'm just telling you that this is happening, Lou. It's happening, but it just didn't happen 4 weeks ago. It's been happening all along. This is the absolute extreme. But now all of a sudden.
But it's being leveraged. I mean, de Blasio in New York basically told the federal government, look, I need $7 billion to keep the city running.
I had a discussion with my significant other and pals. You know how those always go, Lou. And they're talking about remodeling their homes. And they're going to put this bathroom in this kitchen. I go, are you ostriches? What do you think your tax bill is going to look like 2 years from now, assuming we come out of this? You think for a second that the $50,000 bathroom should even be being discussed at this point? I mean, what is this state's finance going to look like 2 years from now? Or what is the government's finance going to look like? What is the Fed? The Fed is just printing press and throwing money at people. I mean, what does anybody think this finance, assuming this thing is gone in 2 years, which is a big assumption, what do you think this is going to look like, Lou? SP Futures up 38, NASDAQ Futures up 117. But if we put enough money in, we'll keep the market up. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hines, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels with us. S&P futures up 40, exactly 40. We're pushing it today. NASDAQ futures up 123. Every stock in the Dow 30 that is open, there's a few that aren't yet. Well, not open, but trading is up. The ones that have shown no trade so far are Travelers, Merck, and Goldman Sachs, but when they open, I'll bet they're up as well. Dow futures up 281. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 101, that's 1%. FTSE up 52, that's 0.9%. CAC around up 40.9% over in Asia. We've got the Nikkei has reopened. Were not open yesterday. They're up 55 points, 0.3%. Shanghai, they're down 6, so, 0.2%. Say flat, 0.2%. Hang Seng down 156, that's 0.6%. Bonds were up to 0.70 on the 10-year rate, so it's a little higher than we've seen. The Bund minus 0.5, and the Japanese can't get any closer to the zero, low minus 0.003. So we've got oil up again today, 2.41. This is the June contract. Again, this contango, as I explained yesterday, is flattening out pretty well. I'm going to say we went from $11 in the June contract to $31 next year. 13 months from now, and now we're 26, maybe to say 33. So we're contango, but we're a hell of a lot flatter and a lot healthier, I would say. Brent up 190, 31.62. Natural gas 196. Yesterday was over 2. RBOB 93 cents. And we have gold is, let me get the gold number here. Gold's up 940, 1697. Under 1700 though, it made its run up higher than that. It's been steady here for a while. Silver up 14 cents, 1515. Like I said, I'm trying to get a little long here in silver. I think if copper, which is up 2 cents, 237, if copper gets above 250, I think it'll take silver with it, but there's an if. What if the queen had balls, she'd be king, Maddie? Is that what they say? Something like that? Anyway, what do you got for us, Travis? Weather sports.
That's one version of it.
Yeah.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues to report already this morning. On the south side, it looks like on the outbound Dan Ryan, just before 63rd Street, there is a crash that's affecting the outbound Ryan, not affecting inbound if you're heading toward downtown, but keep that in mind as you're approaching 63rd Street. Also, there was a truck fire, a semi-fire, on I-80 westbound at LaGrange Road that's causing some delays with crews on the shoulder trying to get that put out. So keep that in mind if you're heading westbound on I-80 approaching LaGrange Road. One other issue on the south side, Guger Road at 147th Street, there's an accident with injuries.
Is that Geiger Road?
It's G-O-U-G-A-R. So I don't know how you pronounce that.
I think it might be misspelled. I think it's Geiger because I've been on it. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah,
southwest side.
That's how it's spelled on the screen. Maybe it's misspelled on the screen. It was a road I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. Geiger would make more sense. That's the issues on the south side. Up north, one other issue to report, and that is on Route 53. Looks like Route 53 northbound at the Jane Addams Tollway. There is some debris on the road that's causing a bit of a slowdown. No accidents to report, just a slowdown there on Route 53 as you're approaching the Jane Addams. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, similar to yesterday. Cool temperatures, but not too bad. We'll reach a sunny high of 60. Right now it is crystal clear and 49 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, another hot one today. Sunshine with a high of 106. Right now it's clear and 70. On this day in sports history, Chief, May 7th, 1945, the famed Branch Rickey announces the formation of the United States Negro Baseball League. On this date in 1945. And on this date in 1977, I imagine you remember this one, Chief. 1977, May 7th, Seattle SLU won the 103rd Kentucky Derby.
We're just out of school. He ended up winning the Triple Crown.
Yep.
Matter of fact, it was a horse the year before. There were two in a row, I think. It was Secretariat in, like, 73. And then it was Seattle SLU, and what was the other one? There were three Triple Crown winners kind of right in a row. None of the Seattle SLU or the other one came close to Secretariat's times, but...
Yeah, so there's been 13 Triple Crown winners in history, and you're right, there were three right near each other. Secretariat in 1973, and then there was back-to-back. Seattle SLU in 77, like we just mentioned, and Affirmed in 1978.
Yeah, and he even Affirmed in every race, beat Allidar by like a head, right, Lou?
Something like that. Yeah, they ran neck and neck through the series.
And years later, in one of something that Lou probably his guys had something to do with, one of the horse, I think it was Allidar, was a stud someplace, and I don't know if whatever the number was, it was insured pretty high. Anyway, he mysteriously breaks his leg in the barn, and has to be put down. And with this big insurance settlement, or so wasn't that true, Lou?
That one I'm not familiar with, but yeah. It wouldn't surprise me a bit.
There was some story about that. Maybe why don't you look that up? Because it was an interesting deal. That
the Triple Crowns, just looking at the history, kind of seemed to come in clusters for whatever reason. In the 30s, there were three of them. In the 40s, there were four of them. And then there's 30 years go by, and then there's three in the 70s, and then 40 years go by, and now there's been two in the, you know, one in 2015 and one in 2018. And so we're probably due for another one here to keep the clusters going.
Well, probably. Since I've seen, five of them now, to me there's only one, Secretariat.
Seemed to be far and away the best of all time.
Yeah, I don't know what difference there was there, but the only horse,
Every now and then they take... When the Derby, the Derby's running, or one of the other Triple Crown races, they will put an image of Secretariat up there with the horse that won, and show you how far ahead Secretariat was.
It's crazy. Yeah,
and it's pretty stunning.
Well, what's a second is what, 40 yards or something? Some incredible number. I mean, it's 30 yards. It's amazing how fast they're going. And
Yeah, they're flying, but yeah, it's what Secretariat did was I was going to say it was almost inhuman, but of course it was inhuman because he's a horse.
Yeah, but it got him. We'll do this trivia one of these days, not today. Who were the sixth sports figures that were on? Was it Newsweek, Time, and Sports Illustrated in the same week? Secretariat was one of them.
Right.
We could, at some
point we had to talk about the sort of the collapse of sports that used to be much bigger when we were, in the 60s and 70s. We start with boxing and then...
Boxing in the 20s and 30s was by far the biggest sport, without question, in neighborhoods everywhere. And in the 1950s, the Pro Bowlers Tour got more TV audience than NFL football.
I tried to describe to my kids the fact that people used to turn their TVs on and watch guys bowling for entertainment, and they just rolled their eyes and said, "God, no wonder there was an explosion of drug use in the 60s.
Well, in the 50s and 60s, how can I say this not politically correctly? Bowling was an incredible sport. It was a whole different world. I mean, in Chicago, it was a dramatically different world. You worked your 8 hours, okay, probably in some factory someplace. Not that everybody was a factory worker, but a Pullman had 1,000 factory workers and 300 office workers. Now, for every 100 factory workers, you probably got 500 office workers. But you worked 8 hours, you went home, in the summer you played softball, pretty much, and in the winter you bowled. And there were guys that bowled 3-4 nights a week. There were leagues in Chicago, because Chicago had a lot of shift work. There were leagues at 6:30. You wanted to be in a 6:30 league. I could never because I was traded on the trading floor. I was in a bowling league. I could never do the 9:30 league. There was a league that started at 9:30. You know, and you know they were full, and all you had double leagues in all these bowling alleys. We can even
I hearken back to the Flintstones, which had Fred.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of the first primetime cartoon shows, and that had Fred. You know, in a bowling league. And I remember laughing about the fact, wow, this is just like real life. And in the 60s, my father and mother didn't do this, but I knew lots of people who did.
My aunt and my uncle bowled in a league in Ford City, a couples league, every Sunday night for, I'm going to say 40 years, Lou. Had a nice time, and everybody knew everybody. Go have a couple of drinks. I mean, the whole life wasn't in front of the TV. They did a thing in Chicago in the 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever it was, in Chicago in the 20s, and they zeroed in on the African-American community, and my uncles told me that from every night from 63rd and State to 63rd and Ashland, which is about 2 miles, they said there were 16 to 17 live bands in bars. This is before people had TV, before you had air conditioning, and they interviewed this black gentleman, and he goes, life was different. He goes, life was a lot of fun. He goes, it wasn't fun when the jobs weren't fun. Because if you're sick, it wasn't fun. He said, but life was fun. He goes, nobody had TV. Said, you came home from work. I mean, these people were different stuff, Maddie and Lou. He says, you had dinner, you cleaned up, you got dressed, and you went out, and you went dancing, you had a good time every night. You didn't sit home in front of some TV. He said, you went out every night. You took your wife, you got out, off you went. And, you know, he said, we had a ball. We had a ball. You know, life was worth living. I can't stand sitting home. This was before you got forced to stay home. He goes, I'd do that again in a second.
Yeah. Well, it was clear to me in the 1980s how culturally, how fast bowling had collapsed and how culturally, isolated it had become. When, I was at law school at Duke and we had a bowling party. So the kids from Duke, for the most part, came from, you know, upper, middle and upper class neighborhoods and lifestyles. I think I was like, there were like 60 of us at this bowling alley. I think I was one of maybe four or five who actually knew how to throw a bowling ball.
Were you a spot bowler?
The rest of them never bowled in their lives. One kid blew his knee out. He hit himself in the back of the knee with a bowling ball.
You're kidding.
As he was trying to roll it. And tore like three ligaments in his knee. It was obvious that nobody knew what they were doing. And for a lot of kids, this was something unique. They'd never seen it before.
I hope they don't let that kid own a hammer or a car.
Yeah. I think he clerked for Supreme Court Justice.
But you know, the difference in people talk about the streets that used to have four or five little saloons on the street, Matty. You sit there and you go, well, how could that even be? You know, when I was talking about the Hispanic community, having more people. When Irish guys especially, he had the small house, he had five kids. There literally, other than his bedroom, there was no place for the old man to be when he came home at 5 o'clock. The place was jammed already. This,
by the way, is one of the reasons the Spanish flu cut the kind of swath it did through the U.S. and everywhere else, because of the fact that everybody's culture there was go out, socialize every night, as opposed to our culture now, which is much more isolated.
Well, I mean, you pretty much, the bar next door was really an extension of your living room. There'd be five guys sitting in there because the kids were all over the living room. I mean, it's a different world. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it wasn't better. It was probably worse. But it's just different. But you know, Lou, what is going through with this disease, I'll call it. It's to me, it's nothing more than a progression of the things we've had. Look at the market. We're up 43 points in the SPU. Every single article you read that says if this goes out 6 months, 52% of all small business in the country will close. Lou, nobody cares. Because Apple is going to have even more dominant position when we come out of this. every kind of antitrust thing that was going after Facebook and Google is totally off the boards, right? So they can go to the moon. Amazon has become a hero, even though they treat their people like crap, and they're the ones having most of the problem. They're able to operate when nobody else is. We've given them that right. Why, we have no idea. They don't even pay property taxes in virtually every place that they are, and yet they have an advantage over the people that are paying property taxes. Are our politicians this really dumb, collectively, and not individually? I mean,
I think that very few of our political leaders are assessing this in any meaningful kind of way, because the short term stuff is so crazy. And by short term stuff, I mean the virus, obviously. And I'd like to stop. We could probably stop talking about that, since that's been beat to death on all of your shows.
Actually, I want to kick back on it just a little bit, if we could, Blue.
Okay.
Because Maddie and I were talking on the way in, and Maddie's much more up on this than me. But what you're seeing in these meatpacking plants in Iowa now, you know, that's a problem. We have a meat shortage because the virus is all into these plants. You know, after all this BS, Fauci and Trump and every expert and every, to this day, I mean, somebody somewhere might have one, so I'm not going to criticize that hard. If you and I had a factory, we're making widgets, and we've been shut down, I don't see, and all of a sudden Jay gets his head out of wherever it is, and says, next week you guys can open up, because guess what? We really need these widgets. I don't see a playbook. You talked about the test flu. I don't see a playbook right now for us opening it. What I would like to see is something like this. Okay, you're going to open up your plant with 200 people Monday morning. Monday morning, there's going to be two tents out in front of the place with five doctors or nurses or all you need. The doctors can't be women and the nurses can't be men. And we're going to test with everybody with these 5-minute tests walking in. And in advance,
we don't have a 5-minute test.
Abbott Labs has had one for a month. They claim. So just roll with me in this.
I'm just saying.
Just roll with me.
The technological limitations on this are fatal. But go ahead.
Okay, but the Abbott test supposedly gives you a positive in 5 minutes and a negative in 13 minutes, as I read 3 weeks ago. Anyway, so just give me like a Belushi minute.
So we're going to add 20 minutes to everybody's work day.
No. I'm saying the first day people show up that have been now at home for 6 weeks, if you are positive, we bought out 3 no-tell motels because everybody's distancing. Nobody's going to those things with people other than your wife. We've got 3 of those things. You're going there for 2 weeks. If you're not, come on right in. And guess what? We're gonna figure out exactly what we're dealing with here. And by the way, we're gonna run by with some alcohol every night, and we're gonna monitor our people. And the people that have had it, you're not going home to infect those people. You're going to some place where you can isolate with other people that have it. And when you're done, you come on back in. And I'm not saying that should be the protocol, but there's none. There's no protocol that I see. And by the way, we're gonna also give everybody an antibody test, because it looks to me like out of 100 people, 150 people coming here, 25 have it. You're going to the motel. We have 30 that used to have it. You're fine. You're in the get out of jail free car group. And the ones in the middle, we're going to test you every week to see if somebody gets it. And if you are, you're going to the motel. There's no mechanism here, Lou, at all, of dealing with this. And yet every day, oh man, we're shocked.
Well, this goes back, and maybe this is the politicians, you know, understanding this, but not wanting to say it. This goes back to the idea that, you know, I don't think the testing is going to make that big a difference. It helps us with, and this was the point of that article, and Natty, if you could find the link to it, you can tweet it out. This was the point of that article that Kevin linked to yesterday. And it's noteworthy that this guy said, look, the testing is great after the fact, but we don't have the technology and we don't have the reliability to be able to test people every day. We just don't.
No, I don't think you need to.
So you give me a test. You give me a test and I'm negative. I walk into the bathroom in at work, and some guy who didn't get tested that day is positive, and I pick it up from him.
I understand that.
I don't have symptoms for 5 days.
What I'm saying is, you know, day one, I think you need to know what you're dealing with. I'm just trying to get through day one, Lou. I'm saying we don't have a mechanism from that. 150 guys are going to show up. Now what? Saying,
so what's the downside, Chief, if we don't test at that rate?
Well, the downside is the ultimate downside, assuming nobody dies, is you put 150 people in the door on a Monday, and by Thursday they're all sick and back at home, and you're still not open.
They're not all sick and back at home.
They're sick working.
You saw that piece from Kevin. You have 10,000. Let's say you have 10,000 people. You take a 10,000 person sample of you know, and then you put them all on a cruise ship or in a closed environment where coronavirus or Wuhan flu is active. You know, 240 of that 10,000. 240 of that 10,000 are hospitalized or are actually bedridden. So the worst case. The vast majority of people that are getting this thing are not even stopping. They're not even slowing down. It's like they got a cold.
So
what's the worst case? I mean, the worst case scenario of not testing is most of the people that you deal with are fine. A very small number will have flu and will have to go, you know, go home for a week. And then a very, very, very small number get really, really sick.
All right. I probably started my story out wrong, Lou. What I meant to say is, at least in this small environment, for once, I would know what I'm dealing with. Any decisions I make going forward, which might be exactly what you're saying, unless you're really sick. I don't want to do, Lou. I don't want to send somebody.
If everybody comes in, let's just say you get, you know, a workforce, and you do the test. You force everybody out of the plant or out of the office. You sit them all down. You take the test, and let's say it's the 5-minute test. Let's say they're not waiting 4 to 5 days or 24 hours. Let's say it's a 5-minute test, which I don't believe has really made the grade yet. And you instantly tell your workforce, right, 60% of you are positive for antibodies.
Lou says Abbott Labs is full of bleep, stocked down $8. Oh, wait a minute. No, go ahead.
Now what?
I'm saying it's stocks down $8. Now what? You just caused they're going to come after you for insider trading because you just shorted it before you said that, I hear.
Yeah, I wish. You know, now what are you going to do? That's the information. The information really doesn't help you. The information might be of use to a public health authority.
I say,
we've got a hot spot at this office.
I think that Lou would be smart enough to say, I was going to go visit Grandma tomorrow. Now I'm not. But it gives us information, you and me, information to make decisions. We may not make any decision, but we've had health officials making decisions without any data for months now. Maybe I just want to stop that. I'd like to actually know what I'm doing when I make a decision.
But what the decisions don't, the decision that you want or the decisions that you're going to make based on this data are not meaningful.
It's meaningful if I offer somebody a free place to stay that's not home if I know they're contagious.
And why would you do that?
Because if the guy says, if it's Matty Weber and says, well, no, he's got, I worry about his wife and his dog. If he says, I live alone, go home. If he says, I live with Grandma and her four sisters, you're not going home.
I'll tell you what, this makes sense. This makes sense if what we were dealing with was much more severe. But
Lord, there's people dying. It's severe if you're 70.
Well, but I'm just saying that's a different argument.
What do you mean? You and I are close to 70.
That's a different argument. If you're saying that we're going to isolate the old people, that's something else. But a random testing.
What I'm saying is knowledge leads to some informed decisions. I didn't go into what they were or might be. So right now we got no knowledge. We don't know if 20 million people have this disease or 1 million. That's pretty screwed up at this stage.
I would agree with you if this was a much more severe illness, but it's not. So
if you're one of the people that croaks from it,
let's look at treating the people who manifest the symptoms and taking care of them, and we'll manage that as we go.
The people who all croak before they realize that ventilators maybe were worse than good, I'd like those people back, Lou.
What is that's not going to be affected by testing?
No, I understand that. What my point is, I'd like to have some kind of idea where we are on a situation. I mean,
everybody would, and we won't have that we won't have that kind of knowledge for probably another year or two.
We had the governor of Texas on yesterday explaining how he's going to open up the barber shops and how many feet away the chairs have to be waiting, and if there's more than two people. Lou, I don't need my governor doing that for me. We had one of our friends, and we'll go nameless, his mom in a nursing home, maybe reaching the end of her days. Can't visit. If she dies, there will be no, I'm not even sure they can get a priest in there to give last rites. There will be no mass in the chapel. There'll be no viewing wake, whatever you want to call it. Even though some of the Southside churches have 1,500 people you can put in there, you still, Governor Jay has graciously said maybe you could have 10 people at a funeral. The mortuary where they want to put the body, they have 4 people there, so you can only bring 6 to the internment. Lou, we're out of our mind. We're out of our mind, these people.
I agree. On this kind of thing, I agree. On cutting people off and keeping people out of retirement communities or long-term care facilities, no problem. Keep people out. Lock those places down. They are like a target-rich environment for that virus. But for the rest of us, I agree.
At the end of the day, Lou, I'm going to say that 90% of the people in nursing homes that got the disease got it from workers that were moonlighting in hospitals, and not from visitors.
Well, that'll be an interesting, epidemiological study that I'm sure somebody will run. But bottom line again, I don't think that testing is not a panacea.
No, it isn't.
For a couple of reasons. Number one is the technology. Number two is the cost. And number three is what does it do?
Right. Well, okay. I'm saying, whatever. Some knowledge is better than none. These decisions have been better with some, I think. Anyway, Lou, talk to you next week, buddy. You stay safe. S&P futures up 46. NASDAQ futures up 138. Right back, Mr. Fariamzi.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly. Just Matt Weber on the board. We have a Safari Hamzy with us as well. SP Futures
good morning.
Up 44. How are you? NASDAQ Futures up 136. Safari, I'm going to blindside you this morning like I love doing to you.
Where are the ES? Where's the ES right now, please?
Where's who? Oh, the
ES. S&Ps.
The ones that I just said were up 44?
I thought you heard me. I heard you say in NASDAQ.
S&P futures, which was the minis, now it's up only 43. It's dropped a buck since you jinxed it. It was 44.
Okay, I didn't jinx it, but okay, I hear you. Yeah, well, you know what happened yesterday. It's going to be a rough tug of war here between how people see this and how it's being marked, you know, or at least how it's being celebrated, either good or bad. You could hear all kinds of analysis. But we shall see.
I'm going to say, Farrah, and I'll lob this one out there. Maddie can tweet it. Chief says analysis ain't worth squat. It's all money. Two things are happening.
Who said that? She said. Who is she?
Me. I said, it's all money. I'm going to throw my money out there.
Well, especially how it's being doled out. More will come out. Remember, one thing about truth is you can't keep it hiding for too long. It will come out where this money is being doled out at this rate, and with no oversight.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
The level of corruption is unheard of.
At the end of the day, the 100 stocks, 10 stocks that people trade are going to have a much bigger, more dominant place in society. So nobody cares about the small guys that are going out of business because Apple and Amazon are going to be more dominant. But it has to do with money pouring into the system. And what I'm happy, I'm dying to have you on today, even though you're going to hate you heard this. Your country, your former country, just the other day decided that they have such rampant inflation that they are going to take four zeros off their bills. Did you see? You hear that?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
That's not usually a good story.
No, but if you look here,
those stories don't end well. So.
But if you were on Talking Head CNBC over in Iran, you would have been giddy. May. The last 5 months, because the Iranian stock exchange has gone from 350,000 to 980,000 in 5 months. Now, it has nothing to do with the value of those companies. It has to do with the degradation of the value of the currency.
Correct.
So when we're talking about it...
Because in Iran, I was there, I don't know, 20 years ago, and on the first visit, they immediately offered me vice chairman of the exchange. I fell off the chair like that. Wait a second, guys. Something is wrong here. How can I be qualified for that crap?
Why don't?
Here's the problem. Just like China, they have fiefdoms, and it's controlled by very few key people. Like not just Khamenei, but the guy who was president before, Rafsanjani. And Rafsanjani has a family of being rich from very early on from a sale of pistachio. They control the pistachio market. Okay. And he was in a number of stocks. He would tell people what he is. And guess what? All those companies he was in had the same CPA. Hello?
Yeah.
If you believe the numbers out of China, I'll believe the numbers out of Iran's CPAs. I just simply told him, thank you for the offer. I just came here to see the building. That's all. I work in the U.S., and I'm going to go back. I'm just here to visit my ailing grandmother, which passed away 6 weeks later. I have not seen her in 21 years. Because of restrictions on me, restrictions on my dad and my mom, everything. So the point is, nothing out of that country is real.
Well, it is. I think it is. It is real. It is real, Fari, but... I'm looking at
you don't know what I mean by real.
Okay, but what I'm saying is these numbers, look at the money supply numbers in July of 18.
What was the source of that numbers?
The world something. It's 50,000 whatever it is. I don't know how many zeros around this stuff. June 2019, it's 75,000. So it's up essentially 50%. This is the latest I can get in the money supply. So if you look at your stock market from June of 2018, which is roughly 100,000 or whatever the hell it is, to June of 2019, it's 250,000 of whatever the hell it is. Okay, so you've had, and they increased their money supply by 50%, their market doubled. So it has nothing. And I'll bet you that
it's not filtering down to people.
Well, no, but it's not doing that as well. But also, in terms of any other currency, the stock market isn't up at all. So now our guys are putting our money supply is going up 40% or 20% in the last 6 weeks. So if the market if the market goes up 20%, has it really gone up in terms of value? It's a problem is if you're not in, you're not participating. Gold were to make a run and you don't have any, you're not participating.
In Iran, you got to realize the inflation has been very bad every year. I mean, there were years that 40% inflation.
Right.
If you were not into asset play, you basically left the economy.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Because if you're like a government employee, you had no purchasing power.
Right.
Okay. So what did the government do? It set up these offshore setups. For example, for the military, to keep the military on their side and not have a coup d'etat, in Dubai. How do you think Dubai was built? It's all what they set up in Dubai to also, it was a double prong attack to achieve two goals. One is to make the military involved in the economy because you can't live on even a colonel's salary over there. It's nothing. You and I have more change in our pocket than he gets in a month. Okay, as a colonel. So what they set up these offshore companies in Dubai. What was the other purpose? To work around the sanctions. Okay, why is it that if you're in north of Tehran, you can live almost as if you're in Paris? I mean, you should see the high rises. You should see the washing machines, the BMWs. Anything short of a Rolls Royce is on the northern part of Tehran. The best Italian gelato you can dream of. The best shish kebabs. I mean, the life in northern Tehran is unreal, okay? I mean, actually, there's a part of it looks like almost like Tokyo. These big towers are built, but then go pull the grand deeds. See who owns them. They're all Republican Guard officers. How can you afford a building? And then, by the way, they're trading dollar. These real estates are trading dollar. That is, yes, you bring Toman into the escrow, but the peg is the U.S. dollar that day. Because they don't even trust their own currency. So there's a lot going on there. A lot of it's fictitious. A lot of it's just surreal. And I think if one thing this coronavirus has done over there, because again, same policies, authoritarian and denial, I think that regime will collapse too. It will. As more people get more aware of it, of course, look how many people they're put in jail and basically evaporated. I mean, it seems like in Iran, you seem like an endless jail because they're executing them and then burying their bodies or burning some of the bodies. Some of the people who were raped in jails, their bodies were burnt so the coroner couldn't tell what had happened to them. That's the country we're dealing with.
What is the effect of the virus over there? How bad?
Oh, very bad. I mean, the numbers are way too low. Tehran is estimated to have the capital city, which is about 14 million. My numbers are incorrect. They may be a little bit old. They were talking about 20 to 40%.
Infection?
Nothing to do with they're reporting to WHO. What you see on John Hopkins, it's fiction for Iran.
But infections or deaths?
No, infections. Infections are about 40% in Tehran. Just Tehran alone. Yeah, they just recently said you can't travel to any other city. Yeah, and I mean everybody is in lockdown. Everybody is still in lockdown, and they have these task forces that medical task forces, but come into your house armed, okay? And they go through the procedures. Yeah, one group after another is filtered. You know, one comes in for temperature only, one comes for blood draw, and then one comes is ambulance to take you out. There's no issue of what your rights are. They're not discussing your rights. They're coming. It's like a medical police. They're coming in armed with telescope. What do you call it? With equipment to test you, and immediately if they see a problem, they evacuate you on the spot and quarantine the rest of the family.
Where?
It's a police state. Of course, it has always been a police state, but right now they've combined the two, medical and police, together. So how are you going to control 14 million people at 20 to 40% infection? Not easy.
It's tough. You hope
and there's no hospital capacity near that.
Well, you hope that.
And one more last thing. Some of the best hospitals are not open. First of all, the ERs are closed. It's not open to walk in. It's only for the basically like Politburo, people in control. If you have any standing with the government, those hospitals are for you. You can't even come in. And those are the best ones, and they're run by mostly U.S. educated staff.
Well, I could see.
But not available to common citizens.
I could see guys like you joining a country club just because other people can't get in.
I'm sorry. Come with the question again.
I could
see
you joining a country club just so other people can't play there, just you.
What about that?
I could see you doing that. So join being a member of a hospital where nobody else can get in, just you.
Well, is that something I like? You mean?
No, I'm saying that's why people have country clubs.
So. Oh yeah, well, I mean, listen. Under the Shah was a different bourgeoisie protocol. This one is going its own. This one you have to wear a abba, which is the dark. Coat and have a turban, you know. Over there, you had your medals from the Shah and military uniform, and nobody would stop you. So, yeah, I mean, don't you think we have in other countries?
It sounds like
if you're part of Politburo and Wuhan, you think you went through the same thing that everybody else did at Wuhan? Of course not.
I think in Wuhan they nailed the doors shut, and the people that came out that survived went back to work, and the bodies went out the back doors. I think what happened there.
Yeah. Yeah, the numbers in China is not correct either. So, I mean, you can't have those numbers out of 11 million.
Well, with
the shutdown they had and testing, there's no way those numbers are correct.
Well, the message I start out to try and give, Fari, is when you start messing with your currency,
right,
which is what we're doing here, there is no doubt that's what we're doing here. And,
I know. It doesn't end well.
But every other place, it's not like there aren't examples of this happening. I mean, the Weimar Republic, we had Venezuela, we had Argentina, and now we got Iran. I mean, it's right there.
Bring your wheelbarrow if you want a carton of milk.
But
let me ask you another question. No, I've got a question because I cannot answer. As you know, I live in Trumpkin land.
Okay.
And some of these guys have a few things for a vast resort, other than houses and this and cars and all that. They have buried a few, each of them, in their own way. Size varies. Safes with guns in there. Buried. They're buried, the safes, okay? And, and gold. Now, I don't know much about guns other than, I mean, my favorite gun is a B-2 bomber. So, that's a different problem. But these guys are, asking about gold. Here's the question. Why isn't the gold going higher? If everything is this bad, why isn't gold going higher? I couldn't answer that because I'm not a gold bug. I've never followed it. I thought if the gold went up, it's a verification or proof that we have a failed state. You know, the political system has failed, at least in that country. You know, in local denomination. Have you looked into that?
I actually have a large position for my people in some of the gold stuff, and we weren't doing as well.
Yeah, bullions, or are you talking about the...
I got a lot of the GDXs.
So I see. So you have paper. You have paper in your hand. No bullions.
Right. Some of the guys have the GDX, which is the gold ETF, and I have some people who have silver, which is a silver ETF.
GDX is miners, right?
GDX miners.
Junior miners, right?
That's the big miners. But I'm going to say that there are some countries that need the money and are liquidating for it.
I think so, too. I've been saying that some of these guys, for example, look at Putin. Single commodity country, and look what a mess he is in. Yeah, the oil has picked up. But wait until 2 weeks for his delivery.
I would say
if
that
my count is right, FOB Cushing, where it's going to be delivered, is not going to be $24 or $20. The contract low is $6 for the M20 contract. And according to Martin Kao, which is one of the smartest guys I know on CNBC, does their option action, he was telling us through a video, wide distribution, on Facebook and I think on Twitter, that according to his calculation at Cushing, in around, I think, April 20th or 22nd, when the contract settlement was coming up, they had only about 30 million barrels of space in the tank farms.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But what was coming down the pike, based on the contract value, was near 100 mil. So there was 70 mil they couldn't store. That's why it went negative. Along the way, if you read more, there's another 50 million coming to us in tankers, which I don't know what to do with that, for the M20 contract. There's no way they have built enough tank farms to cover that. So this is gonna turn around and go south again. And so what's Putin is gonna do? He's gotta sell his gold.
Well, there's no real correlation between Putin's oil and the bizarre crap that happened last month in May in Cushing, because a real lot...
No. I'm not saying there is. I'm just saying that was a U.S. issue. But what I'm saying is that if we're going to go and visit $6 a barrel, okay?
But how is he
going to feed his people $6?
Let me put it to you this way. It was never $6 a barrel in Cushing. It never was below zero. One firm, we'll go nameless, had a automatic, shall we say, liquidation thing that sold a lot of the stuff under zero because the thing didn't recognize that you're not supposed to sell stuff under zero.
However, you
said a few things here and asked a couple of questions, but there's more questions there.
Sure.
But $31 for next year, or even $21 now for an oil contract in New Orleans, say, or in Cushing, that doesn't help. That doesn't help Putin out either, because he's got to get it to New Orleans
or MBS
or anybody here.
Right? Social contract with citizens.
No, but what do you think?
Price of 107.
Yeah, but what do you
107?
Right, what do you think the price is in the Permian Basin? What do you think the price is for the tar sands oil in Canada right now? Where those people are. I'm going to say the tar sands, that thing has a huge discount to it anyway because it's half sand, duh.
Right.
I'm going to say that if you're getting $4 to $5 a barrel in Western Canada, you're doing good. I'm going to bet you the Permian Basin, you're probably getting $7 because it costs you $10 or $12 to get it.
You mean extraction cost?
No, I'm talking about what somebody will give you there because it's going to cost. What I'm saying is, this is the hardest thing to explain about commodities, and the people who just listen to the tweets and just watch CNBC all day, they don't understand. And I don't, you know, I don't begin. My brother Dan, who traded in the corn pit for a while, knows a lot more about it than me. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm in the middle here somewhere. But there's a huge difference between saying corn's $3.80 a bushel and having Far East Farm in Northeast Iowa, 40 miles from a highway or a railroad, saying your corn is not worth $3.80. It's worth $3.80 when you get it to New Orleans. Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be, yeah, yeah. So it might be somebody says, I'll give you $2. It's going to cost me, you know, 20 cents a bushel to truck it to this barge company on the Missouri River, and it's going to take that guy 50 cents to get it to St. Louis. I mean, it's a big deal. Commodities, it's not like stock where IBM is the same price at PTI as it is at Merrill Lynch.
One unit of IBM is one unit of IBM. That's not true with commodities. I agree.
No, so it's...
Plus, you have different grades, too. You have different
absolutely
grades
different grades. So when you talk about West Texas, that's high-end good stuff, right?
Correct.
I mean,
WTI, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
I mean, there's always... If that stuff's $21 or, say, $30, a more normal price, say, $40, a more normal price, what do you think a tar sands price is? $25? It's got to be a $15, even. If
has to be this guy. But listen, the current contract, the M20, the low as reported by all data feeds is $6.50.
Right, at Cushing.
FOB Cushing. That's when they put it down. That's what and that low happened on the day of the final settlement for the K20 contract.
Right, but
all I'm saying, all my thesis is this. There's not enough space, there was not enough space to store the oil that was, remember, the contract value is about 100 million barrels. And we're not using it as commercials to take deliveries.
Right.
A lot of that is a speculation. But because it's a commodity, there becomes a physical delivery unless you can get rid of it in the final moments, final days, whatever.
All right, what you need to look at, and I don't have the data. I should get
but that's coming.
Okay.
That's coming again.
Right, wait a second. It's not...
And we don't have we haven't built more space. So I think if we were shocked last time, watch out in 2 weeks. Right, we're going to have another shock.
I mean, I'm going to lob this out there because I don't know. I'm not accusing anybody of anything.
No, whatever, I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I'm just saying this is what I'm hearing. That's what I'm reading. Plus, there's more tankers are coming in. Remember, this contract has 36 contracts.
Look at the price.
It trades up to 3 years forward.
You're talking about two different issues. Can I separate them out for you?
Please.
Issue one is the tankers are coming in. Okay. Sorry, look out the
new oil, right?
Okay.
New oil, because that's what before. Correct.
Sorry, look out the damn window. There's nobody on the street. So every single day, even we used to, world used to use what 100 billion barrels a day. It's got to be down to 65 or 70 or somewhere in there. I don't know, 75. Even though people have cut back on production, it's still going to be 90 or 85.
Yeah.
So there's still this massive gap by the day, which is getting worse by the minute, by the hour, by the day. All right, that's question number one. What the market is telling you right now, whenever you have a commodity, there's always a last day where the thing trades front month, okay?
Last notice day.
Well,
right.
But then it flips to the next month. The contract still trades.
Right.
Like, but people generally will roll to the next month, okay? And then that
interim. Usually around the 18th of the month.
Right.
Yes.
What they do, so that what the exchanges want to have happen, and I don't care what it is, whether it's oil, soybeans, corn, rice, you name it, you don't want anything delivered.
Correct.
So,
well, no. Majority don't want.
No, you don't.
The commercials want delivery.
No.
Non-commercials
don't
want any delivery. Right?
Nobody wants anything delivered. The whole delivery mechanism is there so the futures price and the spot price equal on the last day. If they didn't do that.
Correct.
So at the last gasp, if the longs say, we want $8 to get for you to buy in your corn contract, I can show up with my railroad car full of corn and say, take this. Take your $8 and shove it where the sun don't shine, because here's the corn. You can do that.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is that whole 14 days.
You mean what the president was asking to use the light?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. UV light. Okay, gotcha.
So, hear me out. Is it that whole 14 days, this is what exchanges are supposed to look at. That's why exchanges have a lot of work to do. They're not just a bunch of schlumps. They look at the corn contract. I'll use corn, not oil. That contract should be starting to go down. The futures contract, the open interest, should be dropping like a rock.
Correct.
Every day toward the end. At the end, there's hardly any, let's put it that way, because nobody wants to deliver. The grade's different. You got to inspect it. It's a pain in the ass. Nobody wants to do that. I mean, you got to have the corns. You got to pull it out. You know how they do it? They pull it out. They have these big, long things that reach all the way to the bottom of the railroad car. They take each corner, and they take the middle. And they dump it out on a table, and they inspect it. They see how many bugs are running away. You don't want to do that. So nobody wants to deliver the stuff. So the idea is, what this is telling you right now is that it doesn't seem to be a problem in Cushing this month, that contract is orderly liquidating down. So if it orderly liquidates down to where everybody rolls into the July, there's not going to be a problem like in May. There's not going to be a delivery problem, even though we know the pipelines and the railroad cars are full.
Yeah.
Right?
So and more tankers are coming in.
Yeah.
And Loop is full. Look how many, look at the aerial pictures of Loop. That's Louisiana offshore oil port. See, what's waiting there already? I mean, there was a number of guys who were looking at, hey, how do we lease some tankers and take deliveries? I said, are you nuts? You don't know how long you're going to keep that storage.
Yeah, but right now,
before it comes back.
I know, but right now, the tanker doesn't have anything to do with the pipeline or Cushing because it's out on the water. If it can't unload, it can't unload, right?
Right, right. And there's $50 million in route to here for this month.
Yeah.
Remember, long-term contracts. This is a commodity that everybody needs. At least in the past they did.
Well, for
now, what I tell them to Putin and MBS is to drink it before it goes bad.
I'm still going to work, which isn't very far. And I'm using half the gas I used to. Where else am I going to go?
Yeah, yeah. Listen, my car, I went last night to put some gas in it. I noticed that it's got 50% gas. Okay. And I'm trying to turn it on. Now there's a little gizmos in there.
Yeah, you went out to get gas.
You don't have no battery.
You went out to get gas. You had somewhere to go. All right, fire. We got a dash, buddy. SP futures up 42. NASDAQ futures up 125. Be right back, Mr. David Edelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley's Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures up 40. So we're rolling along here. NASDAQ futures up 120. Dow futures up 337. Like I said, every stock in the Dow, industrials is up. Leading the pack would be, nobody up huge a lot. Goldman Sachs up 243. We got United Health up 323. They were down yesterday, I believe. We have Visa up 322. So everything is kind of to the moon. The one that's really been flat on its behind has been the transportation average, which probably shouldn't surprise anybody. Airlines, railroads, nobody's doing so well, very well there. All the basic stuff is not doing so hot, and yet the market keeps going up. We'll talk about that in a minute. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 118, 1.1%. FTSE up 56, it's 1%. CAC around up 54, 1.2%. We're in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 55, 0.3%, so not much. Down 6.2%. Hang Seng down 156.6. Bonds, we're at 0.695 on the 10-year. The Bund is minus 0.52. Japan, this can't be closer to zero than this, Matty. Minus 0.003%. We've got oil up 245. This is the June contract, I believe, 26.44. And we've got Brent up $2, 31.76. Natural gas, 194. RBOB, 95 cents. We've got gold now up $10, 16.98. Yesterday it was over 17. So even though it's up today, it's back to where it was. Silver up 18 cents, 15.20. Copper up 3 cents, 2.37. Like I mentioned, I'm trying to sneak my way in. Of course, I refuse to pay up, so I haven't done it yet. Trying to sneak myself a little long silver here because I'm seeing copper creep up just a tad. And if it does, I think it might take silver with it a little bit, but who knows. Again, I'm probably months early, even if I'm right. Maybe what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of issues down south that we had earlier this morning are all clear. The semi-fire on westbound I-80 at LaGrange Road is gone, so that's great news. Also, the outbound crash on the Ryan at 63rd is been cleared, too. So both of those areas are now running smoothly. No issues coming inbound on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson and Eisenhower have been quiet all morning, as has the Edens and Kennedy. So off to a great start there. Only issue right now on the screen is up in the northern suburbs. Aptakissick Road eastbound at Prairie Road, there is some utility work going on that has that reduced to one lane, so there's a bit of a slowdown there, but everything else is nice and quiet. Weather today, lots of sunshine, similar to yesterday. Cool temperatures, but could touch a high of 60, a bit cooler by the lake. Right now it is sunny and 50 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 106 today. Right now it's clear and 71. Cheap.
You see how you've evolved? When you first started doing the show, Aptakissick Road was a big problem for you, and now you got it exactly.
I don't know if that one was a problem for me, but it's a tongue twister, we'll say.
Let's just say the ladies have been on the show, AV, Jay-Z, had trouble with that one dramatically. Hey, the other thing is, hey, David's here. Manny, give us the unemployment thing. You're watching it more than I was.
Yeah, we're at about 3.17 versus an expected 3 is what I've been seeing. And some people are rounding it to 3.16. Some people are rounding it up to 3.2, but it looks like about 3.17. So 33 million in the past 7 weeks or thereabouts.
Meanwhile, the market's up.
Well, the market rallies seemingly every week on this number, so it makes no sense to me. I'll let you guys discuss
David,
that.
Did they post the continuing claims? Because I really think, if I don't know the answer to this, it's not rhetorical, but if somebody you know, did a claim 5 weeks ago, and now, you know, found a job or are off the claims list, then that is not $33 million anymore. So I wonder, because typically they do initial, which is the $33 million over the 5 weeks, and then they do continuing. And I think that was running right around 17, 18, something like
David,
that.
David, I think you mentioned that last week, and I think you're mistaken in what you're thinking on this. I think continuing is if you file for an extension. It's not if you stay on it week to week. I don't think you reapply every week. In other words, if there's 3 million initial and 1 million continuing, I don't think that means 2 million people found a job that week at all. I think the continuing is at the end of the normal, was it 6 month or whatever, first break, the people who reapply, I think. We will find that out.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, that's important.
Because Steve Leisman and CNBC mentioned that, and that's where I picked it up.
Yeah, because there's no way on earth that last week was the number was what, six, Maddie? That the continuing is two, that somehow 4 million miraculously found a job last week. I mean, that didn't happen.
Right. So, I don't know. But meanwhile, two to watch, and again, it's anecdotal, but it's I think important is, and I'm not involved in either stock, so I'm not, you know, touting anything I own, not one share. But Shopify, SHOP, and Etsy, ETSY, because those have absolutely skyrocketed. And that's home business. Those are, you know, people that are finding a way to make merchandise and sell it, sell merchandise that they have, put their business on Shopify and do some kind of home business. And those are absolutely in the stratosphere, and I'm not recommending them because it's been straight up and all the technicals are way out of whack.
My significant other Audrey has used Etsy to get rid of, you know, it seems that she uses it to get rid of, you know, stuff she might have, she's had a couple of her, you know, more than people need to know, but a couple of her parents, friends, you know, die around family or anything, so she's got, like, you know, might have a Barbie doll from 30 years ago or something, or 50 years ago. And she's sold a couple of these things on Etsy. Now, why do you use Etsy instead of eBay? I mean, I have no idea. I'm asking this question. No knowledge whatsoever.
It's thought of as, I mean, eBay has real stores, I mean, registered stores.
Right.
And they do sell a lot of pre-owned stuff.
It used to be all pre-owned
whatever,
stuff, right?
But Etsy is thought of more as kind of a artisan shop, and doesn't mean necessarily that it is, but like what you said with Audrey, that, you know, people sell mementos or sports memorabilia or stuff they have around the house that they don't like, but it's kind of unique. And then there's a group of literal, you know, artists and seamstresses and, you know, people that sew stuff and knit stuff and you know, do art and whatever, bend metal or make, you know, handmade jewelry or whatever. So it's much more thought of as, you know, if I buy something on Etsy, pretty much, I mean, you're not going to go on Etsy and sell Clorox where you will on Amazon or eBay. You're going to go there to find something that you believe is likely to be one of a kind.
So it's like eBay when it first started.
Kind of, yeah.
But it's much. But David's right. It's much more for arts and crafts specifically, whereas eBay, you can buy anything.
Well, I'm talking about
years
ago.
You're not going to buy a golf club on Etsy.
No.
And likewise, you're not going to buy. It's going to be pretty rare to have, you know, somebody who does, you know, bent tin, making it into a, you know, an animal statue. You're not going to buy that on eBay.
Okay, because, I mean, way back in the day, eBay, when it first came out, didn't have stores and everything was an auction. Now, even if you buy a car, there's a price they're looking for. They might take a lower one, but they're looking. They want you to call them up and just buy the damn thing, right?
Right. So I only bring it up because I've always been a proponent, and there's no way to measure it, that people, one way or the other, are going to find a way. People got, unfortunately, you know, get sick and die from the virus, but I don't think many folks are dying of, I mean, there are. I'm not saying there aren't people hungry because there's all these food pantries and handouts and whatever, so I'm not saying that. But in general, when the CDC says that the average woman is over 20 is 5'3.5" in height and weighs 168 pounds, up 6 pounds in the last 7 years. Americans generally are eating.
Well, yeah, I think they are too, but I mean, you can't, this is the part that, weird part is, David, I got, actually in three spots yesterday, I got my clients long. Because I think the market is going to keep going here because of what the Fed's doing with the currency. And I don't, you know, I say every day, I'm convinced that the market's rally is because the currency's worth less and not these companies are worth more. I mean, at some point here, Maddie's talking 30 some million people got laid off in the last 7 weeks. There's no money there. I mean, the only money there is the federal printing press sending money to states or will be soon to keep paying people. The idea that you walk down the street and nobody's open. Yesterday I made a turn. My neighborhood was going to, where I was going, I was going to CVS or someplace, and I piled into there's a shopping center. Four of the places, the whole front's boarded up. These are big stores.
Yeah.
Under no stretch, even though, like I said, I'm longer now than I think I've ever been for my clients. Even though, but this
with the worst economic data that's ever been seen.
Because I see what the I just went through this thing with Farah. I don't think you listened, but the Iranian currency, they just took 4 zeros off the currency. In this year, the stock is the stock market is damn near tripled, and I'll give you the exact number. And it has nothing to do with those companies being worth any more. It has to do with in where am I here? In 2020, let's say January 3rd, the market was at some sort of, it's like 77. Well, I'll go down. It was like 35,000 or whatever it is. Today it's 98. It's nothing to do with those companies. It has to do with the currency's worth squat.
And then, and I'm not disputing you or whatever. I'm sure when you take out whatever, 4 trillion, 8 trillion, whatever the number is, depending on the day or what you know, impetus, stimulus is being done. But now I look at a chart of the June euro currency, and on May 5th, it was 115.5. And today it's under 108.
Right,
so if our currency is depreciating, which I'm sure you're correct, it has to be dollars out.
Kevin, what
are they doing in Europe?
No, David, don't make this mistake, please. It has nothing to do with the relative value of us versus the yen, us versus the currency. That's another whole set of things we should talk about, okay? One versus the other. What I'm saying is if everybody the world over decides that they're going to increase their money supply by 20% this year. Call it QE, call it whatever the hell you want to call it. The value of everything in the world is now going to be up 20% in the whatever currency you're talking about, but still it's not going to be worth any more to you or me than it started out.
No, I get that. And I understood that when I made the comment.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, since ours is depreciated, can you imagine what's going on there?
Yeah,
it's
probably a little worse. You know,
yeah,
ours will be, we'll degrade ours by 20%. They'll degrade theirs by 30 or something.
Yeah, it's unreal.
Right.
I can't even imagine because you don't. I mean, you hear it the World Bank and the ECB and this, but you don't really hear the giant numbers that, publicized like what we have.
Well, here's a. From 2018, stock market in Iran went from 100,000 something, whatever the hell it is, to 2019. It's roughly say 200. It's up like, well, let's do mid year to mid year, which is what I got. The middle of 2018, it's like 100,000, and if you go to mid year 2019, it's like 250. And if you look at their, so it's up, whatever. But if you look at their money supply. The money supply went from July 2018 of 49,555. I have no idea what those things even are. Middle in 2019, it went to 247. So the money supply went up 5 times in 1 year. And the market went up 3 times, at least. So, 3.5 times. I mean, that's all that's happening. I mean, there might be some company in there that actually is doing better, you know, so they may be up six times and some other guy's only up four, you know what I'm saying? It's not like,
right.
You know, Apple's still not going to do better than somebody else. I mean, you still have all those plays in the market. Whatever the stuff you do technically watch, there's still going to be winners and losers within the market.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but the point being is this is, now we're to where every state is going to be borrowing from the federal government.
Right.
I don't see how these...
Yeah, then Cruz, you know, the Senator Cruz of Texas was, you know, rapping about how, you know, Illinois, because they're in debt and can't pay their, you know, their retirement plans or whatever, are trying to appeal to the federal government. He was absolutely lambasting it.
Well, I don't see why that if you can't make your payment... Again, I don't... You know me enough to know that I don't want anybody harmed ever. I mean, I'm the most gentle old dude there is around. But the point being is the idea that we can talk about this every single day with Jay up on the stage, with everybody in the state getting full pay and pension people getting full pay, when your unemployment rate in the state's going to be 30%, they're out of their mind, David. The numbers, and we're going to get that money on a borrow from the federal government. How the hell are we going to pay that back? I mean, we're going to borrow the money? I mean, first thing we're going to appeal is just say for them to give it to us. That I get. But even that, they're just going to run it up, print it, and send it. We're at the end here. And then the household debt reached a record 5 weeks ago, right before this started. So we couldn't possibly have jammed more battleships into a small lake we're all going to run into each other than we are here.
Right. No, I get it.
And yet, because of the way it's working out and because of the history I read, I'm longer than I ever have been. For my people.
to Mondays, or I'm sorry, last Thursday you said, could the market go to its highs and the GDP go to the lows? And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's just such a bifurcation and really kind of a divorce. If you have those 5 to 10 big cap, you know, issues that are carrying the indexes, they're going to show highs and there's going to be an individual, you know, stock not even weighing into those indexes, like an Etsy or like a Shopify that doesn't contribute much. So there will be others outside of those top 10. But then there's a whole group, you know, that, as you mentioned again early, you know, the transportation ones, the airlines, the casinos are actually starting to come back, but the cruise lines, the airlines, some of the trucking companies, rail, whatever, I mean, that are, you know, hey, they don't have business.
All right, we have a question for you, Dave. Before we do that, I'm going to say on 12:30, the NASDAQ is now up on the year. Does anybody even remotely think that this country or this economy is in better shape than it was on 12:30? And yet the NASDAQ is up now on the
year. Yeah, it proves that there's a divorce between the economy and the indexes. Not necessarily the market as a whole. If you took an average of and made everything equal weighted, I think you'd see a much closer correlation to the economy than if you look at the indexes.
Matt, you got a question for David from a tweet?
Yeah, Bob just writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter, at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. He just says, can you please ask David what he sees gold doing?
Well, in general, I've been pretty bullish. I did catch Chief's comment on silver. I'll get to gold in 1 second, but there is actually a key number. July silver is the front month, and its high was 1539 yesterday, and closing above 1539, it's at 1521 now. The high was 1529 overnight, so another 20 cents up from here. And you'd make a base for sure. All the price momentum oscillators are literally at the positive cross. So you need one more rally to confirm it. And then I could see 1750 without much problems. In gold, it looks like kind of on the softer side. I mean, in general, from all the money supply things and, you know, no meat and all this other stuff, one would tend to be bullish. It looks kind of like what Chief said, that they're switching more out of the precious metals and into copper and silver, whether, you know, anticipating, you know, recovery or whatever, who knows. But it looks toppy. I wouldn't, you know, if I'm long, I certainly wouldn't let it go below 1660. Upside, you have to really get above about 1730, 1735 to challenge the highs. It looks,
It's a pattern the last week and a half of lower highs, lower lows. Like, as much as my heart and my mind says be friendly, the rudimentary technical analysis says don't be long just yet. I really think, and I've never been really much of a silver bull. I'd say right now, just given the technical setups, I'd rather be long silver than gold.
Yeah, I don't know why, but gold has seemed to settle down here a little bit as the market. People look at the market as the value is now instead of gold, and I think they're sort of totally missing, you know, what's happening in the money part, because why wouldn't we, David? Why would anybody in this country ever think that? We've only done that a couple of times after the Civil War. We did it in 68, and most people, you know, don't really remember their pennies in 68. I mean, I don't. I was in high school, for God's sake. But I mean, the idea that when you start debasing your current, and we went up, stock market went up in 68, you know, went up for a while. And then all of a sudden, when we had the inflation number, but when you debase stuff, and I know I'm the only person around talking about like this, and the last thing I want to do is talk about it, but I mean, it's there. I'll just show you. Fire out that other question, man, because I'm doing some calculations here.
Yeah, no problem. We had a caller that just called in and was said to ask David about PYPL, PayPal. Is it time to take profits, or what are your thoughts on PayPal, David?
It's a horse. I mean, and I don't own any of that either. I wish I did, and I sold some calls and got it taken away, made a nice profit. But watch, it's gapping open. The all-time high, the 52-week high, was 129.59, just above yesterday's, about $1.25 above yesterday's settlement. Did 141 by 141.16, so it's going to leave a very large gap, you know, about a $11-$12 gap on the opening. You know, it never hurts to take a profit. I mean, if it was me, you know, and I owned whatever, 500 shares, you know, certainly you can take off 200, 250 and say thank you. But this is a horse. I mean, it's taken share from Square. It's even taken some share from MasterCard and Visa. And it looks powerful. I mean, right now, it looks like if you settle back somewhere between yesterday's close, 128.30, and what was the 52-week high before today, 129.60, right now, I hate to say it, you'd have to be a buyer.
David, so what is the...
catching in a part and then waiting for a setback to replace the shares, if you're so inclined, is a good idea. Or you can, you know, sell some calls and say, hey, if there's more and they want to take some away, that's fine. But it's a horse. It looks awesome.
Is it their big thing is not just in credit cards and so forth and in payment. It is for people, if you sell and buy through PayPal, it's like you're a personal online bank, correct? Who are their biggest competitors? Is it Apple Money or Google? Somebody's got. Who's the competitor?
Well, Square is a huge competitor.
Okay.
And to a lesser extent, it's MasterCard and Visa. And the, what is it called? Marcus or whatever? Goldman Sachs is Apple Pay.
But MasterCard and Visa don't allow necessarily. If you sell something to somebody online, it's not as easy for them to get to you via Visa than it is PayPal,
but,
correct?
No, but anymore, if I go online not Costco, because they have their own card. If I go online Target and I want to pay, I have a choice of putting in my MasterCard or Visa, or I can automatically have a deduction if I have a PayPal account. So
right,
they do take transactional things for other than Costco and perhaps Apple. They take share there too.
I'm going to have one more statistic at everybody here, because I know I'm either coming out of left field of what I'm talking about today. But we have, let's just say that NASDAQ is even on the year. Everybody who said that everybody thinks at this point that the GDP is down, what, David, 12-15%, something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Guess what the money supply is up? M2, unadjusted M2 from the first of the year.
I would. A big number. 3-4 times that, maybe.
No, 12.5%, the exact same number.
Really?
So The amount that we've degraded the currency is exactly equal to the amount that GDP is down, which means that the market is unchanged.
Unbelievable. See, well, I would have thought the money supply with what they're doing would be even higher.
Well, 12.5% from the beginning of the year to April 22nd is huge.
Yeah.
It's 4 months. It's 36% in a year.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
and that's what I was thinking of. I was thinking 36 to 40%. I meant on a yearly.
Yeah,
basis.
Yeah, oh yeah. So they're keeping up. They're making the market stay even.
Yeah.
David, thank you very much, buddy. S&P futures up 42.75. NASDAQ futures up 134. Like I said, I'm about the most nervous bull there is out there, but I am bullish. We'll be right back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.